There's a quote that I like from Bear Boy. I think he was a Ute spiritual healer. And he said, learn who you are by observing who you're not.
This Restorative Justice Life is a production of Amplify RJ. Follow us on all social media platforms at Amplify RJ. Sign up for our email list and check out our website at amplifyrj.com to stay up to date on everything we have going on. Make sure you're subscribed to this feed on whatever platform you're listening on right now so you don't miss an episode. And finally, we'd love it if you left us a rating and review. It really helps us literally amplify this work. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the episode. Welcome to This Restorative Justice Life, the podcast that explores how the philosophy, practices, and values of restorative justice apply to our everyday lives. I'm your host, David Ryan Barcega Castro Harris, all five names for the ancestors, and I'm the founder of Amplify RJ. On this podcast, I talk with RJ practitioners, circle keepers, and others doing this work about how this way of being has impacted their lives.
Hey folks, I'm Elise, your producer, and welcome to This Restorative Justice Life. Today, our guest is Angela Dixon. Angela is on a mission to transform the way people communicate, build relationships, and resolve conflict. She has facilitated workshops for men, women, and youth of diverse cultural backgrounds. She brings this perspective and all of her experience in restorative justice at many levels into this conversation. But before we get into it, I'd like to let you know that we have now started a TikTok account called Amplify RJ. If you check below in the show notes, you can find exclusive podcast clips on our TikTok. Thanks for tuning in this week, and let's get into the episode.
Angola, welcome to This Restorative Justice Life. Who are you?
Hi, David. It's nice to meet you. I am a healer, among other things. Yes, I'm a healer, and I started doing that probably in, I'd say 2012, full time.
Who are you?
I am a woman. I identify she, her. If you want to say they, them, I'm not offended by that either, but I'm she, her, I'm a woman.
Who are you?
I am a student. I work with a lot of schools, but I think the best teachers are also students.
Mm-hmm. Who are you?
I am a soul rebel. I like to learn as much as I can from as many people and as many cultures as I can reach.
Who are you?
I am a mother. And it's funny because I always say I'm a feminist, but it took having sons to become better at being a full person and seeing the other side of the human story.
Who are you?
I am who I am. I think that's an open question. I'm evolving.
And finally, who are you?
I am Angola. And I think there's power in your name. And so one of the things I like to ask people when I sit in circle with them is the meaning of their name. I think that opens a beautiful door into who they are or who their family is. Sometimes people don't know. Usually they know who either what their name means or who named them. So I am Angola, and I know that my parents named me after the country in Africa. They gained their freedom in, I think it was 1975. They gained their freedom. So they named me Angola Chimeringa, which, you know, loosely kind of means Angola's freedom, but Chimeringa is a movement. It's a music style. It's kind of the fight for freedom.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for sharing. If you hadn't shared the meaning of your name, I was going to follow up and ask. But it is always good to check in after, that who are you. So to the fullest extent of the question, or the fullest extent that you want to share here, how are you?
Great. I'm coming into this meeting feeling hopeful. I think that we, have gone through something historic with this pandemic, and we're still not out of the woods yet. But I feel hopeful going into a new school year, seeing that, you know, our kids may be able to sit in person. And even if they don't, even if they have to start online, I have, you know, an elementary age son, and I'm not sure if that's quite safe yet for them. They're not able to be vaccinated, but I feel like there's a lot of hope brewing that we're starting to come out. So I came in today feeling good and hopeful.
Yeah, you talked about how this pandemic has been life-altering, to say the least, for so many of us. How have you been able to stay afloat to the extent that you have been?
Well, my faith. I have a really strong faith, and I believe that faith can carry you through anything. So my faith has kept me strong, my family, my friend connections, and I'm pretty comfortable with alone time. I'm an ambivert, so I love people, I love crowds, but I also love time for to myself. So this wasn't uncomfortable for me, but it is different when you're forced to be inside versus when you choose to. So just learning how to reach out to people and make sure you're communicating, even if it's just texting, you know, being online, being on the phone, it feels good to connect with people however you can. But having a strong faith, no matter what is thrown at you, I believe you can make it through.
Yeah, there's so much to that. Along with faith, you also talked about the connection that you have with people in community. I'm reflecting on the conversation that I, behind the scenes moment, had yesterday that aired probably a week before this conversation is airing, where, you know, the opportunities to connect with folks have changed, right? In some ways, it's easier to connect with folks. You can be like, you know, shoot off a text or like, hey, let's jump on a FaceTime or Zoom. But like, we still do miss something when we're not connecting in person. And, you know, there are benefits, safety for sure, of doing things the way that we've had to over the last, you know, over a year now. But, you know, all these ways of connection are central to what restorative justice, this healing work, restorative practices are all about. You've been doing this work for a minute now, but you've probably been doing work even if you didn't know the word restorative justice before that. So from your perspective, how did this journey get started for you?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because it got started, you know, really through the lens of healing and really having a safe space for people to talk and open up without retribution and without a hierarchy, feeling like we're all equal. So I started doing the specific practice of peacemaking by sitting with a group of professionals who do racial justice work and racial equity work. And it was just a safe space for everyone to sit and talk and really just do that self-healing first. And this is something I tell people when they ask me about restorative practices, is how do they, you know, how do I get into this and how did you start? And I would say the most important thing is to do your own work first, right? Mm. You know, go to a circle, inquire about healing circles or talking circles where you can just go and deal with yourself first before you try to help anyone else. So this was an amazing space for people who do, you know, human resources work that really focuses on race. And it was a place where we could all talk and just open up, and there was no fear of retribution for what we were saying. We were able to be honest. And that's really how I got started. It was such a beautiful process. You know, it was a 3-day circle. We were there probably 8 hours a day. We went really deep, but it was so beautiful. It was life-changing in that I saw how this could be used in so many different ways just in that weekend. So that's what really got me started.
Yeah. When I reached out to you, one of the things that stood out to me was that HR background. And I'm curious, and this is filling in some of the gaps, but I'm curious if you could share a little more how you went. I guess part of it is like what drew you to HR, but then how you transitioned from, you know, that space, which in some ways can be really rigid and uncircle-like, mm-hmm. towards the space which is much more person-focused and healing-focused.
Yeah, I was drawn to human resources because of the people. You know, I love working with people. I think naturally coworkers are drawn to me I would want to talk. And so I just love working with people so much. I thought, well, human resources is a great field. You have the opportunity to sit with people that you work with, and not just your coworkers, but with management and upper management and ownership. And I was able to create these relationships naturally. So it was just a real natural progression for me. And then when I started doing circles, it was really just working on my own self first and talking with people who do similar work as me, and seeing that, you know, we have so many of the same struggles, no matter where we come from in this work. It was just enlightening how much we can help each other just by creating a safe space and listening to each other's stories. You know, storytelling is so important to any restorative practice, being able to really listen to someone. And active listening is one of the tools that I teach. And it's not a natural thing for most people. Most people are just waiting to answer, right? They have a lot going on in their head, mm-hmm. and you may say something and they get this great idea and they're just waiting to tell you, but active listening pauses that and slows you down. And I have people have conversations where one person will talk and then the next person will reflect what they said. And then the person who originally spoke will have an opportunity to say if that was it, or if there was more, maybe there's some things you missed, maybe some things you hit right on the nail. And in that way, you're learning how to really deeply listen to each other without the need to respond.
I'm struck by, you know, when we sit in circle, the ways that we listen to understand, listen just for the sake of listening, not to respond, because we're forced or asked to, you know, wait for a talking piece to come around. And, you know, what you were going to say based off of one person's share is going to be totally different by the time the talking piece comes all the way around to you. So like, what's the point of trying to like respond in any given moment to what other people said? Like, that principle like applies to, you know, our everyday interactions with people, right? Where sometimes we go into conversations with, you know, very clear intentions about what we want to have accomplished by the end of the conversation. Maybe it's we're giving people directions, maybe we're getting directions. And in those conversations with folks, the assumptions that we're making based off of those responses, like, don't lend to great listening or reflective or active listening practices. And things get left out, right? We might be able to accomplish the task at hand, but the lack, we're not able to connect in the same way. And right, when we're, I think there is a line between spending too much time reflecting back for people and, you know, just moving on because we have mutual understanding, right? Like the beginning, when we first got on the call, there wasn't necessarily a need for you to like reflect back everything that I told you about the logistics of this podcast recording, right? But there are opportunities that we miss when we're just so task focused and not connection focused. I'm curious if there is a time in your life outside of sitting in literal circle where that type of listening has been really impactful and helpful.
You know, it's funny because for a lot of us who started doing this work in the greater Seattle area, one of the things we like to tell people is that this is a lifestyle, and, mm-hmm. you know, use it at home, use it in your interpersonal relationships and see how effective it is and how you can use it in your work. So I definitely use it in my personal relationships, especially being a mother. Active listening is priceless as a parent, because sometimes kids have a hard time finding their words. But if you are at their level and you're looking at them and you're not waiting to speak and you're really letting them get their words out, their body language would tell you things, their energy would tell you things, and they feel so much better when they feel heard. So I have used it with my children because remembering back when I was a kid, you know, I wanted to feel heard and I was really quiet, you know, around people. I'm a listener. I like to sit and listen to people. But I appreciate people who really sit and listen to me when I'm speaking. And so I give that gift to my children because I know that people appreciate feeling heard.
Yeah, there's something that you said when you were first talking about your experience with Circle, where, you know, everyone is having the chance to be heard. Like, you had that wonderful experience, right? Where you learned about yourself, you learned about others, you understood how this could have such great implications for lots of different aspects of life, as you just shared, right, from the personal to professional. When you had that experience, what was it that prompted you to think, like, you know, I can dedicate my life to this kind of healing work? And I know you had been doing healing work in other spaces before, but there was a shift for you there.
Yeah, it was really just, you know, we came from different age groups. And some of us had similar backgrounds, but, you know, there are some of us who had really different backgrounds, and seeing how kind of our different experiences, we were able to be a mirror for each other. There's a quote that I like from Bear Boy. I think he was a Ute spiritual healer. And he said, learn who you are by observing who you're not. And that was really powerful in that circle, because there were people that, you know, obviously came from different backgrounds as me, but I felt that certain struggles were similar to mine. And it was rewarding to see how just giving space allowed us to connect. Even though we had had some different experiences, the things that connected us were powerful enough to where I could still help him, and he could help me, or I could help her and she could help me. So in that moment, I felt like, oh, wow, you know, there's a lot of people I can think of that would love to sit in a circle, just different groups that have different issues. And even seeing conflict happen, there was a little bit of a conflict that happened that weekend, but seeing how it played out and how we allowed for that, and we allowed for everyone who was there to reflect on what was happening in the moment and how that conflict quieted down so quickly. It was organically happening while we were learning this process. It happened, it came up, and we handled it restoratively. We talked about it. We didn't run from it. And so many times, for me specifically, in working in school environments, you know, conflict is like, well, let's separate and remove. But in this process, it's different. If there's a conflict, we may take a little break, but we're going to come right back into it. We're not scared of the conflict. We're going to face it head on. We're going to talk about it in the moment and let it calm down, and then let you reflect. You know, what were you thinking when this happened? What were you thinking? And oftentimes, misunderstandings can be handled right then and there. And that's powerful. That's powerful for so many different situations. So for me, I felt like, wow, this is a really powerful healing tool, because so many people don't know how to communicate, right? And when conflict happens, oftentimes it's a misunderstanding, right? We assume negative intent when we should assume the opposite, and at least give people the space to speak on what they were thinking. You know, what did you understand? What was going on in your head? Okay, did you hear what they said? Now, how about you tell me what you were thinking? What was going on in your head? And see how we can dismantle conflict in the moment. There's so many misunderstandings in life, and we can avoid the pain of anger and resentment by just handling it right there in the moment and not letting it fester. So I just found that to be powerful.
Yeah, there's something early on about what you said about, you know, removing people, removing problems. Like, you know, one of the things that I've been taught in this work is that you can't actually remove someone, right? Unless, right, removing someone from a community is putting them into one, either another community or putting them into isolation, right? They're still there, right? Mm-hmm. The problem didn't get solved just because the root causes of those problems didn't get solved, right? The needs didn't get addressed. Maybe the temporary needs for quote unquote safety, or, you know, the harm stopping in any given moment, like what was addressed, but, you know, those problems still exist. And like, what are the things that we can do to heal those things? A lot of the times there are things that communities can do to repair harm and meet needs, even without having that kind of dialogue or that kind of process. But so many times it can be solved in the ways that you were talking about. Needs can be met by bringing folks who have caused harm and who have been harmed together. Of course, when folks are ready to, right? Not wanting to bring folks into situations where they're still actively causing harm or still ready to be antagonistic of each other or antagonistic of the problem. But, you know, making sure that we're not removing folks as a solution in and of itself is so key. You know, I'm curious how that differs from, or how you've seen that differ from your HR practices and how you've helped organizations, schools think about all of that differently.
Yeah, you know, I have one incident that happened that left a lasting impression on me. And that was just an incident where I had to walk someone out of the office. I had to help them, you know, pack up their things, and they had been let go. And so for safety, I helped them, you know, pack up their belongings, and I gave them a little space and time to do that, and then came back and had to walk them out of the building. And it just, it felt really demeaning for the other person and for me, you know, because I personally really liked them. And the decision to let them go wasn't mine, but it was my job to handle it. And I just felt like there could have been a better way to sit and give this person just a safe space to talk about their feelings, about what was going on, and really have an opportunity to say goodbye in the way that they felt best to everyone that they had worked with. And then maybe do it privately. More privately. I mean, I did it as privately as I could, but there was a request to walk them out at that moment. And they weren't really given the dignity to finish the day. And I just feel like there has to be a better way than this. Because then you can see, luckily I haven't had to deal with it personally, but you can see how someone could be angry, right? And why people would return to a location where they worked or maybe gave years of their life too, and felt like they were treated unfairly, because in that moment I was as loving, I was as kind and patient as I possibly could be. I mean, I gave them a hug and we talked, and I let them know they could call me anytime to talk if they needed someone to talk to. But I still felt that lack of dignity for them. You know, they just weren't allowed to finish the day and do it privately. I mean, so much in our culture, when it comes to accountability, we want action and we want it now. And we forget about the person, right? And so the whole idea of being restorative is restoring someone to community. So even if they don't work at your company anymore, they know people, right? They may be friends with people there. Give them an opportunity to have some dignity if they're leaving. And oftentimes in the corporate world, I mean, you just have to handle business, and it's considered not personal. In fact, that's a popular saying, isn't it? This is business, it's not personal.
Right.
But I would argue that it is personal. In fact, people bring their spiritual beliefs with them to work. They bring their values to work. They bring their personal identity to work. So to ask people to almost become robotic and separate that from their working self, I don't think it's realistic. We have to learn how to accept the whole person and deal with people in that way. So yeah, that left a lasting impression on me, and I never wanted to do something like that ever again. I knew there has to be a better way to handle this.
Yeah. What are the ways that you have thought about or reimagined that? And what are some things that you've seen work?
I definitely would have called a circle. You know, if it was something that I did back then, I would have called a circle with the people that were involved and had everyone speak. And then I would have told them to finish the day, and I would have given them time to go and speak to anyone that they wanted to say goodbye. And then I would have had them leave at the end of the day after everyone had left. Because I think there's a certain sensitivity we have to have, especially if someone is leaving under duress, to give them a privacy. And you can't give someone privacy if you're like, we need you to leave in an hour, while everyone's standing around working, wondering, oh my gosh, you're leaving. People are going to stop you on your way out. Oh my gosh, you're leaving. What happened? And then they're going to question you. I don't think you should put people through that. I think everyone should be allowed privacy and dignity in that situation. So I would give them to the end of the day. They can wait until, you know, most of the other offices left, because you can still supervise that. and allow them time to kind of grieve and say goodbye.
Yeah. Is there space for, I guess, like, asking them, like, what they need, what they want in that space. Probably what they're going to say is, like, I need not be fired, right? I need my job, right? But, like, with that being what is happening, right, giving them choice along with that privacy could be huge. Had you been able to try things like that, or have you worked with folks who have been able to try termination processes in that kind of way?
Yes, I have done those. You know, after that incident and it leaving that impression on me, once I learned the sort of practices, that is something that I absolutely facilitate for others, and I show them how to handle it better. Yes. And the key to that, you know, question and answer of what would make you feel better and how I would prefer not to be fired, that's something that you want to do in a circle, right? That's something that I would pull the team aside and go into the conference room and schedule a time and have everyone sit in a circle and talk about the incident. Okay, so what were you thinking when this happened? And let them talk, let everyone hear it, and then have someone else reflect back what they heard them say. Have another person reflect back, so you get different viewpoints. And then have them respond and go around the circle in that way so that, yeah, they can express their desire to not be fired in that moment. So that way, when the circle is over, we've agreed this is confidential. We're not going to bring anything out of this room. And we've already laid down the guidelines for how this person will leave. Like, yes, we're going to give them until the end of the day, until everyone is mostly gone. We'll assign someone to supervise that. Give them some privacy and some space so they can leave at the end of the day. And that always goes over better than, you know, just putting someone on the spot telling you have an hour, pack up your stuff and walk out in front of everybody.
Yeah. This is a clarification. And I'm just looking on LinkedIn. What was the journey from Innovation Tech in Miami to founding Circle Pulse? Because what I'm hearing is, like, somewhere in that 11 years, you were exposed to restorative justice. Mm-hmm. Is that...
Yeah.
And then you also moved to Seattle at some point and started all of this.
Well, Seattle's my hometown. That's where I was born and raised. And so Miami is where I was living and working at the time. And so there's a big gap in between when I left Miami and when I started doing restorative practices. You know, I got married, had kids, and then I did my healer training. So I'm a master energy healer. And that's really what got me interested in having a healing practice and offering spiritual healing. But I wasn't sure how I wanted to do that. You know, there's some red tape, there's other things you have to consider. So it's like, well, how am I going to do this? Am I going to just, you know, maybe start a church, or how do I want to go about this? And I wasn't sure what was the right way to do it for me. So then I got exposed to restorative practices, and I thought, wow, this is a great way to blend my business, which is really started out just really being consulting and doing, you know, my human resources consulting, and then adding in my energy work with a practice that I could kind of blend, you know, like ancient tradition with modern business practices. And that was my idea in starting a business. I could have worked for someone else and tried to do these practices with them, but in my experience, it's hard to change corporate culture when you're a part of it. It's much easier coming in as an independent person with my own business and coming into a business and helping them to change their culture. So I chose to start my own business, and that was a big step for me. And I'm so glad that I took that step, because it allows me the freedom to work with corporate groups, work at universities, work with school groups, nonprofits. And I wouldn't have been able to do that if I was just still an employee. So that was like the biggest change for me. I stopped being an employee and became an employer. And, you know, that gave me the freedom that I needed to really promote how these practices are not just a spiritual thing. I mean, there's two sides to me, right? There's the spiritual side to me, but there's also the corporate side to me. And I wanted to share how these practices can be used in business and can be used in schools in a secular way, where we're taking the best practices and bringing them to these programs so that we can humanize you again, right? Our children are not robots. We are not robots. And we have to learn to respect each other, communicate as human beings in these types of spaces without feeling like we've crossed a line. So it wouldn't have been appropriate for me to come in as a church group into a business because not everybody's comfortable with that. So I wanted to secularize it. I wanted to take the best pieces of peacemaking and bring them to the corporate level and bring them to our public schools and say, look, you can take what you need from this and create this whole new practice, which is really what restorative practices have become, because they have a foundation in this deeply spiritual peacemaking, right? But they've been secularized so that they can be used in schools and so that they can be used in businesses and so that they can be used in courts, right? They can be used for mediation. And without offending someone, how do you do that? Well, you take the religious identity out and you just secularize it. So you use best practices. So what are the best practices? I found, number one, sitting in a circle as equals and taking hierarchy out. Number two, keeping it confidential. We still use a talking piece. So that's the third piece. I think it's important to use a talking piece. Now, it doesn't have to be a feather. It doesn't have to be a traditional talking stick. For different groups, I use whatever is appropriate. So for some of my school groups, I'll use a mascot. You know, I'll use a stuffed animal, that's their mascot. If it's a bulldog, I'll use a bulldog toy, things like that. If it's a corporate group, I use whatever is appropriate for their group. And we just have these basic guidelines that we bring to each group. And then we allow them to create it themselves, create your own process for your group that is appropriate for you. But we have these very basic things that we bring in, which are the best practices that will give you everything you need out of restorative practices, because it's about trust building, restoring relationships, and learning how to communicate and deal with conflicts.
Because we had that conversation about active listening at the beginning of this. You just shared a lot there. And I was like, oh, there's this one thing that I wanted to say earlier. But I was like, no, focus. Focus. Be here. I did want to hearken back to, hearken. I don't think I've ever used that word before. But hearken back to, you know, the thing that you said about, you know, when we're bringing these practices into schools, like both the adults who work in buildings and students, right? They're not robots. You were talking earlier about, you know, people can't really check their spiritual, physical, mental, emotional parts of themselves at the door. Like, we take those things with us wherever we go. I'm someone who has struggled with this idea of sanitizing, secularizing, whitewashing, restorative justice practices, because, you know, the people that I learned from did this from, you know, indigenous perspectives, right? And there are ways that folks in the field, some people have sanitized this work to the point where the roots aren't showing through. Mm. Where do you draw those lines in the respective context that you're working in?
Well, I think the first thing that anyone should do in the teaching this practice is be mindful of where it came from. And I always teach my groups that this is an indigenous practice. And, you know, when you learn it, you're given permission to share it. And when you secularize it, you're not taking the indigenous roots out. You're just making sure it's appropriate for different groups that you're working in. But it is important for everyone to know that this is an indigenous practice. And like I said, traditional peacemaking is a beautiful, deeply spiritual way of communicating. and being in community. And so there are many different traditions that are similar, and I bring them together. You know, there's the West African tradition of passing the stone. That's a really old tradition of just passing the stone and talking and kind of bonding in groups. And of course, there's the tradition from the Yukon, the Lingit, which is the way that I learned peacemaking, which is very spiritual. And we smudge before we get started. We always open with a reading. And then we start with an introductory round and everyone to say who they are and how they're coming into the room. So there's different types of practices that are brought together under this umbrella term of restorative practices, right? And so it's important for what, however you learned your practice, that you just leave a little space to say, hey, this is who I learned from. These are the different traditions I'm using. They are indigenous. And I like to leave information for people who want to look it up. Because there is, oh gosh, I'll probably have to look it up for you. But there's a couple of websites that I direct people to that they can go to learn more about traditional peacemaking and learn more about talking circles and the Brazilian circles that we use. Those are primarily used for conflict, but there are different traditions where you can just go and look online, and I tell people to look on my website, and it'll tell you kind of the backstory of the different styles that I use. And I think that's important information to have as a resource. But when you go into specifically a corporate office, you know, you have to remember that it's not always appropriate to come in with regalia. Mm-hmm. And so I think we have to put it in perspective that when we are teaching this, we're not losing the roots by not bringing everything to the table. We're sharing the practice in a way that's most appropriate, depending on who our groups are. So if you're with a nonprofit group and they want to do a peacemaking circle, you can bring it all, right? You can bring it all in. You can do drumming circles. You can give all of that history. But if you're sitting with a corporate group, you know, that probably is not as appropriate. And I would just send them a resource list so they can do their, they can look up where the roots of these practices come from. And then maybe some case studies showing how effective it is for what they're looking for.
Yeah, I appreciate you like sharing the differences. I think about how, as someone who's still navigating this myself, right? What does that mean when we're doing this work online? So many of the people who have taught me this work were really hesitant to take this work into virtual spaces, right? Because we lose so much of the ceremony, mm-hmm. right? And we've learned over the last year and a half that like you can still build the spaces, you can still build the connections, even if you're not physically passing a talking piece, right? Even if you're not physically sitting shoulder to shoulder in that circle way, like the ways that we adapt to our environments, whether that is contextual with the literal people that we're sitting with, corporate, community, family, or the mediums that we're using, right? Whether we are sitting in a conference room or in a classroom or somebody's living room or on Zoom, right? In our respective corners of the world, like are impactful, but we can still make those similar bonds, those similar connections, that similar ways of making peace, right? Whether proactively or responsively to harm.
Yeah. And you have to remember that there's different practices, you know, all under mm-hmm. that umbrella. So for peacemaking, there's a very specific way of doing it. And if you're just offering a talking circle, there may be a specific way of doing it. If you're going to do more of the Brazilian style of kind of facilitated conflict mediation, that's going to look a little bit different. So this is about coming into the room, knowing what they are going to be learning and offering good resources for people to look up on their own time. Because I like people to learn by doing. So there's the Native American Rights Fund. Indigenous Peacemaking Initiative, and I find that's one of the best ones. There's a lot of information on that website. So that's NARF.org. And they have lots of resources for you. Obviously, there's a Living Justice Press. Living Justice Press is great. I'm a featured circle person with them, and they offer lots of information for people who just want to read about it, learn a bit more about where it comes from, the different types of restorative practices, because there are several. There's lots of books you can read, and oftentimes people just want a little bit of backstory on what you're doing. It's nice to have a case study showing that it's effective and that it works. There was an article I just posted speaking of how effective this is for girls of color in schools, girls that traditionally have issues feeling invisible in those spaces, and how effective this is for them. So those are the things that I like to share, just so people can get the big picture. Now, this is a shared practice, and it comes from many different sources. And there's different ways to do it, but there are best practices, definitely, even though there are a variety of sources for different restorative practices. I think everyone has best practices that we want utilized in these different spaces to make sure just that it's being taught properly and that you are respecting whoever taught you this.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I'm thinking about how those different practices play out in just like the benefit of each, right? In the different context that you're in, right? Because even like within the cultural, the corporate versus not so corporate, where you can bring more cultural spiritual practices in, like the ways that one group who is more open to spiritual practices, like might be more open to one way of doing things than another, and like the different ways that you're able to do different I guess like tools you're able to use, practices you're able to use, can be really helpful. We've talked a lot about how this applies to, you know, work-ish spaces. I'm curious what this has looked like in your spiritual healing work.
You have much more freedom. Definitely when you're doing healing work, much more freedom. Because in schools, again, you want to have that separation. You don't want to offend anyone. You don't want to bring anything into the school that would be offensive. Same with corporate groups. But when you're independent and you're hosting a healing circle, then people are coming into your space, right? Or a space that you've deemed a safe space for them for that purpose. You know, because I go to different spaces. I like to go to parks, you know, and I'll rent different spaces that are really beautiful. Like there's, in the Northwest, we have, you know, lots of islands around us. And one of them's Whidbey Island, and they have a retreat center you can rent. And it's just really beautiful. Like they have a labyrinth out there. They have these conference rooms with a big drum, and you know, they can hire a chef to make any type of food you want. Like if it's just all really natural food or vegan food, or you know, vegetarian or healthy. And so you kind of create an experience for groups like a retreat, and you have so much more freedom to bring in all of those different spiritual practices and invite people really to learn the deeper practice of peacemaking. I think sometimes when people hear restorative practice, they think of maybe just a talking circle, sitting in a circle with a talking piece. I mean, it's been on a couple of TV shows, you know, and I kind of laugh whenever I see it. And I go, oh yeah, that's what I do, sort of. That's what I do sometimes. And they don't realize how spiritual it is and how peacemaking can be much different. Like I said, the first one I did was 3 days long. And we were there 8 hours a day. And they're like, whoa, I don't know if I could sit there and talk in a circle for 8 hours. But that's not all you're doing, right? So you're smudging, you are storytelling, but you're also doing different activities and exercises with your groups to bring them closer. So it's a different experience to do a 3-day event versus, you know, a 2-hour training or a 3-hour training.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. You know, my curiosity from there is, you've built this life for yourself within the context of Circle Pulse that allows you to work with different people in totally different contexts. I guess there's two ways of asking the question, like how do you balance where you're putting more energy, or the other way of asking is like, where do you prefer to spend time?
Well, that's a hard question to answer. I think it's because of the way I got into this work. I love people, and I started by working with nonprofit groups. So I was working with two different ones at the same time, and they were doing two kind of complementary but different things. So I started working with the Center for Ethical Leadership, and they were hosting healing circles and peacemaking circles in community. And then I also was working with In Park Seattle, which is the nonprofit anti-racism coalition. And we were specifically doing racial healing circles. So those were two kind of complementary but different things going on at once. And then I started teaching this practice at schools. And so it's really hard to compare. I just love working with people in general. Yeah. But I must say, like, the youngest kids, they take to it instantly. They don't have any walls up. They're very open and honest. And they come into the practice just ready to participate. And I think as adults, you know, because we've lived life and we've gone through a lot more experiences, sometimes we're guarded. Sometimes adults can be suspicious about what they're walking into. Some people are like, what is this? You know, what is a peace circle? You know, and they want to make sure, like, what kind of thing am I walking into? What are you really doing here? But with youth, they're very open, and they just take what's given. This is a circle. We're going to sit in a circle, and we're going to pass the talking piece, and I'm going to ask you some questions, and you can just talk for as long as you want, and then you pass it on. So I find that the most fun I've had has honestly been with my elementary age students. They love it.
I think part of it is, you know, like you were saying, like, they haven't been as corrupted, they're not as guarded, right? I was listening to someone else describe Buddhism and the idea that they were talking about. It was like, in the beginning you view the world as like everyone is your friend, mm-hmm. and as you get older you forget.
Yeah, just to piggyback off of that, absolutely. We forget, and also sometimes we're just hurt, right? We go through trauma, and we see the world through the lens of our trauma. A lot of our younger kids, they don't have that yet. Some do. You'd be surprised. Some do, and they just let it all out, which feels like an honor to be there, to hold space for that. But I find adults, yeah, I mean, we go through life experiences, we go through trauma, and we bring that with us wherever we go. That's why I said, we're not robots. We can't separate ourselves from our identity. We try to be sterile in these spaces where we're told to be sterile, and it doesn't always work, it spills over. So it's important to have safe spaces where you can just open up.
Absolutely, and like, those spaces don't necessarily have to come after harm has occurred, right? What are the ways that we can, one, help people get in the practice of that, so when there is harm, we can use those spaces to address the harm, but also, how can we just proactively build together? There's so much in there. I realize, like, I've just gotten caught up in talking to you. I realized that you said we had about an hour. Are you okay to go a little bit more?
Yeah.
To get to the questions that everybody answers here on this podcast?
Absolutely. Let's go.
Perfect. So we've talked around it a lot, but for you, define restorative justice.
Wow. I define restorative justice as an alternative to punitive justice, where we work to restore a person back to community, and we give both victims and the accused, or the person who may have authored the harm, an opportunity to work through their conflict and an opportunity to heal. So I think there are levels to restorative justice depending on what type of harm was done. Definitely it wouldn't be appropriate to do the same type of process for someone who's accused of getting in a bar fight versus someone who's accused of maybe sexual assault, right? We would handle those things differently. But within those levels, I think that we can offer this practice to everyone if given the opportunity.
Thank you. As you've been doing this work, what's been an oh shit moment and what did you learn from it?
Well, I've had a few of those. Wow. Well, going back to In Park and doing racial healing circles, we had groups of allies together and we had groups of people of color together. And then we brought those groups together. And I think one of those, oh, wow, moments was just realizing how much we learn from each other when we're in our own spaces, that that's important. There was a point in time where I thought, no, we need to do this all together. We need to always be all together. But no, it's important for women to sit with women. It's important for men to sit with men. It's important for trans youth to be able to speak with themselves. There's certain lessons you're going to learn from people who go through your same experiences that you can never learn from anyone else. And it's important to get through that first before you get in a mixed group. It's important for allies to sit with other allies and really check each other in a way that probably would be offensive if I did it, right? But it's not as offensive if someone can mirror you and speak on an experience that you two may have that you know is really similar and you handled it different. So that was an oh wow moment for me, is that I need to not just be focused on creating mixed rooms, experience with people who are from all different backgrounds, but I need to be sensitive to have people who have similar backgrounds in the same room. You can learn so much from each other. You need that mirror.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Can be healing and like so educational and can prevent a lot of harm, especially when we're talking about folks from groups who are privileged, going through their learning process in front of people who are marginalized and oppressed by those intersections of those identities.
Absolutely, because the first time you sit in a circle, you really want to make it as safe of a space as possible. And if someone is going to get, you know, if you have a mixed group right away, you may create some triggers, some trigger bombs, right? And you don't want to put someone through that in their first experience. So if I have a mixed group and I can't separate my group, you know, I will keep it as, I say that there's levels. So I like to keep, I first have the first level, you know, the first round. And I decide based on what happens, how deep I'm going to take my group. Because you don't want to take a group really deep into a conversation and then have to leave for the day and leave everyone open. So if I have a mixed group and I can't, you know, put them in smaller groups, then I will keep it on the first level for the first circle, for the whole circle, because I don't want to traumatize someone who's coming really wounded, right? You have to be mindful of that, and you have to be able to feel the energy of your room. And that takes practice, right? You have to listen to the responses that you're given, pay attention that of the topics that aren't spoken about, that you know would usually come up and go, ooh, okay, this group is avoiding this certain topic. Maybe this isn't the right time to bring it up. We're going to wait until day two, and then we're going to bring that up. We're going to go a little deeper, and then we're going to bring you back up out of that. And on day three, we're going to try to come to some resolutions about those things, right? So that takes practice. And that's why I say there are best practices. This is as much an art form, right, as anything else. I appreciate the art of peacemaking. You have to be sensitive to the people that you are and be able to listen deeply and respond to what they're giving you. So I love putting like-minded people together. I love people who have a shared experience together first, because they can take each other deeper than a mixed group might, you know, they may feel a little more comfortable. You have people who have let's say, people who have an issue with LGBTQ plus groups in a group with trans kids who want to talk to this group and learn. You don't want to do that right away, mm-hmm. right? Because someone might say something that just triggers someone, and then you'll end up in a situation where no one feels safe anymore. But if I have two separate groups and I let one group say all the offensive things they want to each other in their own group, they will check each other. And I have my other group in a group and they will do the same thing, then bring them together. Once that triggering thing happens, this amazing thing comes out of circle. You will have advocates that naturally stand up and take that leadership role when it comes around to their turn, because they've already had these conversations in their separate groups. It's almost preparing them for the battle of, you need to now face your trauma, right? So this is a healing space, and I offer that first, but then I want to take you into the conflict. We don't do that first, but we are going to get there. And I want to get you there in a way where you feel safe, in a way where you feel like you have the tools to sit with it and deal with it. We're not here to avoid conflict. And I want to make that clear, because when I work with, especially in schools, I get this pushback, right, that says, are restorative practices really good, though? Do they make people accountable, or are they just a slap on the wrist? And I want this to be understood that, no, this is real work. We hold people accountable, and we take you into a conflict, and we make sure that you know how to work through the conflict, not avoid it, not run from it. We're not going to separate you and make everyone go their separate ways and never talk about it again. We're actually taking you into conflict in a safe way. So we're going to let you build some trust first. We're going to give you some relationship and some communication skills. And then we're going to take you into conflict so that you can actually get through it.
Yeah. Yeah. This stuff isn't for the faint of heart.
No, it's not.
yeah. You get to sit in circle with four people, living or dead. Who are they? And what's the question you ask the circle?
I would sit in a circle with, gosh, it depends on my group. Really. I've had so many good groups. But if I could choose four people living or dead, I'm going to do this in the context of a group with my students. Mm-hmm. And, I love my artsy students. They're very emotional. They like to share. So I would have Tupac, and I would have, Biggie. And I would have Nipsey, and I would have Bob Marley. And the reason why I would have that group is because it seems like most of them come from hip hop and then one does not, but they're all rebels in their own way. And I think they have important lessons that they could teach a group of students specifically. I think that Tupac and Biggie were portrayed in the media as being these enemies, right? But the truth is they were once friends, and outside sources destroyed their friendship, and both of their lives were lost, I think in part due to misunderstandings. And a lot of the fights that happen that I bear witness to in schools are due to misunderstandings and rumors, mm-hmm. and other people from outside coming in. So that would be valuable. I would invite Nipsey in because he's one of those personalities that are larger than life. He was a community warrior, and he looked beyond his circumstances into the big picture. And I think that's what our youth need to learn to become effective adults. And I think that he would have a great perspective on the outside influences that affected Biggie and affected Pac and that friendship. And I think really the art that we missed out on if they were allowed to deal with their relationship between them. and didn't have to deal with it in the media. And then Bob Marley is just like one of the original rebels. He wasn't, a lot of people aren't aware that the Dreddies in Jamaica weren't initially well-liked. They were talked about. It was not really a beautiful, proud thing initially. So he was a rebel. And he lived the way he wanted to live, and he spread his message all throughout the world. And so I think he has a perspective on being a rebel in a peaceful way that he could share with Pac, and he could share with Biggie, and he could share with Nipsey, and share with the students. And it would be unique, and it would be beautiful and unforgettable. I know it's probably not the people that you're used to hearing, but I was trying to think of what group would I have this sit with. And I think our youth, you know, that's our future. I love sitting with youth. And I think that that group could have a powerful conversation.
What's the question you would ask them to kick it off?
To kick it off, I would say, what is it that you feel, because they've all passed on, so assuming I can invite them to come back from the other side, I would say, what is the one thing about life that taught you the most? What was your most powerful lesson?
You haven't listened to this podcast, but if you had, you would know that now I flipped that question back to the guest. So what has been the lesson that's been most impactful for you?
Oh, wow. In my life. Well, I still have a lot more living to do, but I would say make no assumptions. Whenever I'm disappointed or gosh, I guess it's a two-part answer. Make no assumptions and listen to your instincts. Because I find that I get in trouble when I make assumptions and I don't listen to my instincts. But whenever I listen and I keep an open mind, it takes me further than I could have ever imagined. And that comes up time and time again with me. And I've gotten better at it. I've gotten so good at it that I feel comfortable teaching it. But it's been a journey.
Yeah, absolutely. This might, you might have already answered this by talking about Pac and Biggie, which, you know, I was just talking to with my wife this last weekend, like realizing that like, I am way older than either of them lived to be, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, and I'm 30, right? And so way older, you know, we're talking about 5-6 years, but thinking about like what I know now versus what I knew when I was 25 and or 24 years old, you know, what could they have done? I think you can still, you can take that to so many people, right? Like Malcolm and Martin also died when they were 39, right? Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm not yet 39, but they could easily be alive right now, right? That was a detour. I was going to say, you might have just answered this question by talking about, you know, Biggie and Pac being able to work this out, but what is one place or situation, either fictional, historical, or in your life where you wish people really knew this work? We talk about it in schools all the time, the criminal legal system, but like, what is a space or situation where you wish people really knew this?
I come up with this all the time. I'm like, oh, I wish you guys had restorative practices, or do you have restorative practices here? That's how I really end up talking about it a lot. I find that people just naturally in conversation, they tell me things or inform me about what's going on. And I say, hey, I do that, or I know something that might help with that. It's actually why I thought of Pac and Biggie and Nipsey talking to youth and Bob Marley, right? It's because, you know, when we're asked these type of questions, like who would you talk to if someone living or dead in history and anybody, you know, sometimes we go grandiose and we think about people who've done these books or discoveries or, you know, Nobel Peace Prizes and things like that. But I want to talk to people who lived real lives, and in pop culture, they just become a part of our everyday life, right? Especially musicians. I mean, they get us through hard times. They get us through good times. We celebrate with them. We mourn with them. Music is so powerful. I find that that can become a part of every part of your life. right? We play music at our weddings. We play music at funerals. We play music at graduations. We play music at baby showers. It's so powerful. I don't even know if you realize how much we invite these musicians into our life and this music. It really is the soundtrack of our lives. So when I was thinking about who to talk to and what situations would come out of this conversation, I mean, that's one of them. It's just like, if you think of any situation, there's probably music that came in at some point or another. Like when my brother passed, one of the things that is a constant memory for me is one of the songs I heard the day of his memorial. I heard the same song the day of his funeral. And sometimes when I'm thinking about him, I'll get in my car and the song is playing. And it's such a deep memory for me. It's hard to explain how special it is. So when we speak to musicians and we talk to them about their lives and they share the ugly side of their lives and that it's not just all glitter and gold, that's extremely valuable, so that you can humanize them again and realize that, wow, if these musicians can use that art form to impact you so deeply, what can I do? Mm-hmm. Right? Just in any situation. I there's been times where I've been at the grocery store and, you know, someone is using a bunch of coupons and trying to pay and people are getting upset and someone says something nasty. And I'm like, wow, you know, I just wish we could have community circles for people for free. You need to come and unload their stuff. Because every day you can pick out someone who's carrying a garbage truck full of stress and just ready to let it out on somebody. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And I just wish that there were more spaces for people to go to for free where they could just kind of be in community a little bit more. I love the internet. I love my phone. You know, I like Facebook all right. but I think that it's actually sometimes doing more harm than good because we're losing that physical, yeah, in-person connection with community. And that is the thing I love most about circle work and was the most hard for me this past year and a half was, you know, a lot of my families that I work with may not have access to the internet. And people forget about that. They think everybody has a smartphone, but they don't. Some people have flip phones and they share. And so I lost contact with some of my families that I work with. And it was hard because I missed them. I miss seeing them. I miss talking to them. I miss sharing their stories. And it's not the same. You really have to have spaces where people can come together. So just in everyday life situations, I think, wow, I wish I could sit you down with your family and talk with you. You would love this circle process. You would think it was so weird coming in the room and you would leave loving it. And I think that that's something that we forget, that everybody's getting through life in their own way and people walk around with stress. And when we see weird things happen in community, it's probably just whatever they're going through is coming out on you. It's not personal.
Yeah. When you first started talking about the musicians, I was like, oh man, she going to talk about like bringing DaBaby into a circle back with restoring into community and like, mm-hmm, as trivial and as much as like we make fun of the cancel culture elements of that and like the things that he said like are very harmful and you know the way that he's dealt with that has not been restorative at all, right? Mm-hmm. Like seriously thinking about like what would it take to invite someone into a process like that. Similarly, like folks at the grocery store, right? Somebody just talked about that on another episode, right? Where they had been followed around a grocery store, being profiled, right? Mm-hmm. Like what would it have been like to be able to have a restorative conversation or a circle with those folks? Like this question is meant to be like in some ways lighthearted and imaginary, but like this work really can be a part of every single part of our lives. You might have shared it with the greatest piece of advice or like greatest lesson you've learned, but is there a mantra or affirmation that you want to leave everyone here listening with?
Well, that quote I told you about, learn who you are by observing, mm-hmm, who you're not. I think if you really meditate on that, it's powerful. But also look for mirrors in your life people who will mirror you and can teach you from a similar experience. You might take their advice a little quicker than someone that you feel like doesn't understand you. So find someone that you feel understands you and can mirror you and hold you accountable. That's important. We all need someone in our life that holds us accountable. And especially in those times where we just can't see our own missteps, it's important to have someone there who will lovingly nudge you. And not everybody has that, right? We assume everyone has a parent or auntie or uncle who does that for them, but some people don't. And friends can become family.
Yeah, absolutely.
And really, to piggyback also on what you were saying about DaBaby, I am anti-cancel culture. I really don't like it at all. It is the opposite of restorative culture. And I think it's time that we start letting that go. I understand people want accountability because that's what cancel culture is about, right? It's about accountability. And I think it started from a place of feeling like if you're not going to hold someone else accountable, we are. And then other people joined in. And then it almost became like that gang mentality. Like, yeah, we're all going to gang up on you and we're going to cancel you because no one else will. No one is taking care of this for us. So we're going to take care of it for you. And I think that's a valid place. There's a lot of people who are marginalized in this community and don't feel like they're protected. And so groups came together to say, well, we're going to protect you. We're going to get on the internet and we're going to cancel this person. But now it's at the level of just extreme bullying. We're not allowed to make mistakes. We have to rethink that, because if he's not allowed to make a mistake, neither are you. If he can't say something wrong, neither can you. If he can't do something wrong, neither can you. And nobody is perfect. So we need to rethink that. And I do think DaBaby would be a great person to sit in a circle in public, you know, maybe, you know, for a program for an hour. He's already had some people stand up for him and say, hey, let him learn something. I was surprised Miley Cyrus kind of was like, hey, I think he can learn. This is a great opportunity for a conversation. And she's right. It is. You don't want to take someone who's ignorant and just say, damn, you're ignorant, leave. Because they'll never learn. You want to take someone who's ignorant, send them in a group of people who know, and teach them something. He's apologized several times. I'm not sure if they're good apologies, right? It's almost like he's a little tone deaf. I just don't think he gets it. But do we want to give him the opportunity to get it? Because there may be fans of his who are just like him. And by canceling him, you're canceling them. And then you're going to have a problem. You're going to have a group of people who don't care, who don't want to learn, and who don't care what you have to say because they feel like you're just going to cancel them anyway. That may be a bigger problem in the long run, right? It's a short-term solution to cancel somebody.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, we're talking about DaBaby and comments he made, right? People who stormed the Capitol.
Right.
That's a whole other thing that we don't need to go into right now. But, you know, those lessons and principles apply. Two more questions to get you out of here. Who's one person that I should have on this podcast? And you have to help me get them on. Obviously, DaBaby, right? We've covered that. But who else?
Somebody should have on the podcast. Well, there's a woman named Nikita Oliver. She ran for Seattle mayor and now she's running for Seattle council. I think that she would be great on this program. She's an attorney. I believe she still works with a nonprofit called Creative Justice, but she knows quite a bit about restorative practices, but also she's just a community activist. And I think she would be great.
Noted. Mm-hmm. You got the hookup?
I got the hookup. Send me an invite. I'll pass over the invite and give you the good marketing skill. And I think she'll be on.
Beautiful. And finally, where and how can people support you, your work, and the ways that you want to be supported?
You can look me up at www.circlepulse.com, and I'm on LinkedIn and all of those things. But yeah, just come to my website, shoot me a message. I will get back to you. I'd love to come out and do a circle, you know, or participate in one that you're doing. I love to learn as much as I love to teach.
Beautiful. Well, we'll definitely make sure that those links are in the show notes. Thank you so much. It was wonderful to get to know you over the course of this conversation. Thank you for all the wisdom, your experiences, and the time that you shared with us. Anything else you want to leave the people with?
No, I just had a great time talking today, you know, and if we want to do a hip hop circle, let's do it. We can bring some drums and talk to some people about, you know, kind of the culture and hip hop. I would love to have a circle with DaBaby. I would love to have Miley Cyrus there, because she, there's some other things that went on with her that we could talk about too. So I think it would be fun.
Well, it's out in the universe. Let's make it happen. Thank you, everybody, so much for spending time with us listening to this conversation. We'll be back with another great one next week. Until then, take care.
Thank you, Angola. I really appreciated what Angola had to share about misunderstandings. Misunderstandings often stem from miscommunication or misinformation. Restorative justice helps us see how we can better approach misunderstandings in a way that practices humility and speaking with openness. Angela offered a really important reminder, especially when we're in these types of situations. She said, we assume negative intent when we should assume the opposite. Humans are good, wise, and powerful, and it is so important to remember that in moments of conflict. Angela also mentioned how important it was to not only practice hearing others, but to feel heard. Creating an environment where somebody feels heard can sometimes be difficult, but it is so important to restorative justice. Angela mentioned the importance of getting to their level and to also listen to their body language, to their mannerisms, to the way that they display their energy, and that hearing those things are just as important as hearing the words. What makes you feel heard? Thank you so much for listening to this episode, and don't forget to check out our TikTok account. And with that, I will see you next week.
Like what you heard? Please subscribe, rate, review, and share this podcast on whatever platform you're using right now. It really helps us further amplify this work. You can also support us by following us on our social platforms, signing up for our email list, rocking our new merch, joining our Patreon, or signing up for a workshop. So many options! Links to everything in the show notes and on our website, amplifyrj.com. Thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you next week.